this looks like it may be working now. So obviously our time is limited. Feels a little bit like speed dating right now, but I'll try to cover off on a couple of topics today. First, we'll go through a brief overview of our company. Then we'll talk about how we have managed through what's been a very difficult year for a number of companies and positioned ourselves with strength moving forward. And then finally give a little bit of an update on our view of where the coal markets are today. Okay, this is a map that shows the positioning of our company. Alliance first went public at the limited partner level back in 1999. We were the first MLP to be a coal producer, and we remain the largest MLP in that sector. You can see we have 8 operations currently that are active with a concentration in the Illinois Basin, where we are the largest producer in that region. And in addition, we have 3 operations in Appalachia, 2 in the northern portion and 1 in central Appalachia. And finally, our Mount Vernon transfer terminal that allows us to hit different markets and different transportation options with our products. At the end of last year, we had about 1.8 billion tons of reserves on the books. We do have 2 publicly traded entities. I mentioned Alliance Resource Partners, the LP, which went public in 99. We took our general partner, Alliance Holdings, public in 2006. All of the operations are housed beneath the LP, and the cash flows from those operations go up to support the business of running the company, the distributions to the limited partners, and flow through of distributions, especially regarding the IDRs up at the GP level. The ownership of the GP represents 100% of the IDRs and roughly 42% or so of the underlying LP units. One thing to point out, if you notice over on the upper left-hand side of the slide, management, current members, former members, their families still own about 70% of the general partner. So we believe that management is investing this dollar side by side with our unit holders, and we have a clear alignment of interest. So where are we today? We have a highly contracted sales book. Virtually all of our customers are large U.S. domestic or U.S. Electricity generators, large utilities. We do have some sales that go into the export market, but we play in that arena more on an opportunistic basis than a strategic basis. One of our core principles as an operator is that we want to have a safe operation. And since we've been public in 99, we have been the industry leader in safety, and that continues today. All of our mines are strategically positioned, long-lived, and low-cost. We're in a commodity business, and the low-cost producer in those types of businesses tends to do very well, and I think our track record speaks to that, and our positioning going forward supports it. Fortunately, we've been able to maintain a very conservative balance sheet. For those of you who are familiar with our space, a number of our competitors have gone into bankruptcy. Some have come out. Some are trying to emerge. And in many cases, they're all very highly levered. For us, our leverage has remained very conservative. We exited the year at just below a 1x leverage. So we've been able to grow the company, show strong distributions, and still maintain a solid balance sheet. Pointing a little bit specifically at our sales contracts, we're over 90% contracted today. And roughly 50% contracted in 2018. The behavior of the utilities recently has changed a little bit with natural gas competition coming into play. Generally, you'll see a little bit of shorter duration on their contracting. Recently, we've been selling in the 3-year to 4-year time horizon. That compares to historically more in the 5 to 6-year time horizon. With the advent of low natural gas and with our utilities who have that option within their generating portfolio, they're looking to try to maintain flexibility. And so you've seen their out-year commitments declining. That being said, though, as we look at their open positions in later this year and in 2018, we're very confident that we'll be able to fill up our book. Touching in a little more detail on our balance sheet, you can see what our capital stack is there. Down on the lower left-hand side, you can see how we stack up relative to our competitors from a leverage standpoint. We did just redo our revolving credit facility. We have a $480 million facility that will expire in May of 2019. So we have sufficient liquidity. I think we exited the year at about $575 million in liquidity. Very strong, very solid. As you all are aware, the capital markets have opened back up. So we think we'll have plenty of opportunity to continue to have a solid balance sheet with access to a variety of markets. Let's take a quick look at 2016 compared to 2017. Last year was the first year since we went public in 1999 that we didn't have a record year in terms of financial or operating performance. Obviously, last year was challenging. You saw we had mild weather. You saw utility inventories climbing. Natural gas was very low. You saw a shift of coal demand to natural gas demand from a power generation standpoint. And it was a tough environment. The key point here, though, is while many of our competitors faltered, were losing money, didn't have positive cash flows, were forced to seek protection in the courts, while we didn't hit a record, we were still very profitable. Nearly $700 million in EBITDA, sold 36.7 million tons, $1.8 billion in revenue, and a key from a MLP shareholder's perspective, our coverage ratio is very strong. We exited the year for the full year at roughly 2 times, and for the fourth quarter, we were in excess of 2 times. You can see in 2017, we're showing volume growth year over year. Coal sales revenues are coming down. We have had higher price legacy contracts that have been rolling off, and as we reprice those into a more current market environment, we are seeing a top-line impact. We are, however, also able to manage our costs down. So the margin impact has been a bit more muted than the top-line impact could suggest. And you'll see that we're still anticipating at the midpoint generating $585 million in EBITDA. And at current distribution levels, that coverage ratio remains very robust at about 1.8 times. So how have we done this? Our strategy is pretty straightforward. We focus on low-cost operations. We have built our company primarily on organic development. We have not had to look to the M&A market to drive growth. We are very good at identifying the next generation of reserves that need to be developed, and we are exceptional at being able to go in and bring those reserves online at an attractive capital cost and operate them very efficiently. We do play in the acquisition market, however, but our approach is very disciplined. We're always focused on cash flow and what the cash flow of those assets might look like. We are not going to go chase a hot market, stretch our balance sheet, and put our overall franchise at risk. Our strengths are outlined there very clearly. Strategic operations, empowered and dedicated workforce. We have the long-lived, low-cost mines, very conservative financial strategy. It's worked quite well for us in the past, and we believe it'll work well for us in the future. So let me talk about some of the steps we took last year to respond to a difficult market condition. We adjusted our production in response to what market demand was. We did that in a couple of different ways. We closed or idled some of our higher cost operations with a significant effort to drive the lowest cost mines to as the maximum capacity that we could. In light of the challenging market conditions, though, we did end up reducing unit shifts and production days. So we have been operating at below installed capacity, yet still able to deliver the returns and performance that I've talked about already. Specifically looking at operating expenses, in 2016, when we came into the year, we actually thought that our per unit costs were going to be roughly flat compared to 2015. Given the initiatives that we took that I just walked through, those costs on a per ton basis actually came down by a little bit over 9%. We believe we'll continue to have the benefit of those strategic moves that we made operationally. With production increases, we're able to ramp up the volume at these lower cost mines. The cost of those incremental tons is very low, so we continue to believe that we'll see some cost improvement at the midpoint, roughly at 7% this year compared to 2016. We also were able to reduce our capital expenditures. We had made some reserve acquisitions late in 2014, early 2015, and in some cases those came with infrastructure that we were able to deploy across our portfolio. And as we closed or idled some of our own operations, we again had equipment, et cetera, that we could deploy across. So we were able to defer maintenance capital expenses and keep overall capital quite low. Last year, we dropped our total capital spend by about $120 million or so, and you can see in 2017, it still remains at a pretty modest level. We also reduced our distribution, not because we felt like we had a concern over whether the cash flows from the business could support it, but more importantly, as we were entering into a renewal of the facility that I mentioned, it was very clear from the banks that preservation of liquidity was important. So we took that hard step. We saved about $145 million on an annualized basis by dropping our distribution. But that allowed us to pay down about $255 million or so of debt last year, maintain a very high coverage ratio, and we believe that's setting a platform for us to begin showing growth on our distribution, especially since the debt capital markets are normalizing at this stage. I've already talked about our focus on liquidity, $575 million or so at year-end. The credit facility is there. We also do have $100 million available to us under a facility that we call the Cavalier Mineral Facility. It was put in place to help us support some of our investments in the oil and gas mineral section, where we're looking to drive long-term royalty streams. And then we also picked up a little bit on our capital lease programs. So we clearly believe we're the coal industry leader. We have a solid performance throughout good times and bad times. We performed. We've been able to effectively respond to market challenges, and we're positioned, we believe, to emerge with strength. So let me talk briefly about how we view the coal industry today. You know, if you just believe the headlines, you would assume that coal would probably not exist today or would be on a death spiral. We think that's far from the truth. We believe coal is here to stay. Our near-term market outlook is improving meaningfully. Long-term markets, in our view, are stable. With the new administration in Washington, we think there's an opportunity with a more rational approach to the regulatory regime that there will be an opportunity for coal to, again, capture some market share potentially. The key issues that we're facing today are the regulatory environment, the stream protection rule. The president actually rescinded that a week or so ago, which preserved the ability for a significant portion of the coal assets in this country to remain viable for the long term. You're aware that the Clean Power Plan has been stayed by the Supreme Court. We'll look here in a minute. Even if the Clean Power Plan ultimately is implemented, coal continues to be a meaningful part of the power generation in this country for the foreseeable future. And if, as we expect, under the new administration, it's likely that that plan may not come into play, we think there's real opportunity for growth. The other issue clearly is natural gas competition. I'll touch on that very quickly. For the markets that we operate in and compete in, as long as we're seeing natural gas that's in the 250 to 275 range, depending on which particular operation you're looking at, we think we compete very effectively with natural gas on the cost of BTU along the dispatch curve. And the current forward curve certainly supports the opportunity for demand. Utility inventories, as I mentioned, came very high. They've come down meaningfully this year, last year and year to date, and we see them coming down further in the future. So coal, it looks like this is an EIA report. In 2015, coal made up 33% of the power gen in this country. From this report, it continues to be 33% of the power gen of this country in the 2020 timeframe. In our primary markets, you can see that it's stabilizing. This slide is a little bit busy, but it's meaningful. On the left-hand side, you're looking at EIA projections around share of power generation between the various fuels. If the Clean Power Plan is implemented, which is their reference case, coal makes up over in the 2040 time horizon about 20% of the power gen. If it is not implemented, it hangs in very close to where it is today at roughly 30% plus or minus. And within our markets in particular, we continue to see opportunities for growth whether or not the Clean Power Plan is in place. On the left-hand side, that's the Illinois Basin. The red bar is the CPP reference case. You can see that in that region, you still see increasing coal demand of about 6%. It's much higher if the CPP is not in place at about 57%. And in northern Appalachia, you know, it's holding its own as well. I think I'm out of time. Available for questions and answers in the back offline. And if I think we have a few one-on-ones as well. Thank you all very much.